Okay, Parshas Vayera, page 78. Vayera is an action-packed Parsha. Once we get into the Parshas, the Oveis, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, there's a lot happening, so different things happen in this week's Parsha. But the first is a famous story. It's a continuation of the circumcision, the Bris Milah of Avraham Avinu that happened last week. We had 99, he passed the test and he circumcised himself. And now we are taught it was the third day of his circumcision and he was unwell and Hashem came to visit him. Let's have a look at the Psukim and then we'll try and go into a few things. This is Vayera Elav Hashem, and Hashem appeared to him, meaning Avraham Avinu, Be'eloine Mamre, in the plains of Mamre. Mamre was a individual who owned the spot where Avraham Avinu was sitting at the moment, and he gets a mention in the Torah, not just for geographical purposes to know where Avraham Avinu was, but we are taught that he actually advised Avraham Avinu. It says when Avraham Avinu got the test from Hashem to circumcise himself, he went and consulted Oner Eshkel and Mamre and his friends, and Mamre was the one to advise him to go ahead. Which, by the way, in itself is a very fascinating story. What does it mean that Avram should consult whether he should pass the test? Obviously, he's going to pass the test. Why do you need to consult with others? The various different explanations. Some explain that he obviously was going to do the bris anyway, but he consulted because he wanted them to agree. He wanted that his devotion to Hashem should be something that is accepted and it's understood and internalized by those around him, not only himself. Because we know that Avraham Avinu, his whole mission was to spread the belief of Hashem into the whole land. And therefore he wanted to consult with them because he wanted them to be part of the decision, not because he really needed the decision. At any rate, however, Mamre did agree, and therefore Mamre gets a special mention in the Torah. So Hashem appears to him, who Yoshev Pesach Oil Kachim Hayyim. Oh, and he was sitting at the opening of the tent, Kachim Hayyim, in the heat of the day. Right? Why in the heat of the day? Because we know the famous idea. It was the third day of his bris milah. Hashem wanted him to rest. A 99-year-old man who just underwent surgery needs to recuperate. But he couldn't because Avraham Avinu's personality was one of chesed, was one of kindness. He wanted guests, so he was sitting at the tent. It was the heat of the day, so Hashem had made it purposely hot so that people shouldn't come. He's sitting there at the heat of the day looking for guests, and Hashem sees his pain. So he orchestrates three malachim, three angels, to come in the guise of men, so that Avraham Avinu should have whom to be hospitable with. Yeah. Okay, and that was happening. He lifts up his eyes and he saw. There were three people, three men. Nitzavim olav, standing near him. Vayar, he saw. Vayarat likrosam, he ran to greet them. He pesach oil from the door of the tent, and he bows down to them. An interesting little just comment here on the pasuk. It says he saw that they were standing next to him. He saw. Then he says again, he saw, and he ran after them. That's a funny expression, right? They were right there. So the Mefarshim explained. Rashi brings down as well that what happened was like this. He saw them standing next to him. What happened was that these angels came next to him. They were approaching him. They were coming to his tent. And then they saw that he's busy. They saw that he was changing his bandages. They saw that he was busy, whatever he was doing. And they sort of didn't want to disturb him. So they started to back off. And that's why we have in the pasuk the second vayar. He saw them backing off. He saw them going away. So vayarot likrosam, he ran to greet them. And he said, please don't go away. All right. Vayoymar, and he said. Now the next word, there's two ways to read it, right? We're in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. So you know the Chumash. So he said, "Vayomar," and he said, next word could be read as Hashem. There's a machloek, there's a dispute how to read the next word. Either he's addressing Hashem, in which case you need to say Hashem, or he's saying Adonai, which is my master. And he was addressing the what appeared to be the leader of the group. And he said, "Im no matzasi chen ve'inecha, if I find favor in your eyes, al no sa'avor me'alavdecha. Do not pass by your servant, in other words, do not go away. Please come in." Right? Now again, the two interpretations. Either he's addressing Hashem, because don't forget it was the middle of talking to Hashem here. So he just asked God to hang on while he goes and takes care of the guests. So he's addressing Hashem, he says, "Please don't go away. Let me deal with the guests and then I'll come back." Or he's addressing the Malachim and he's asking not to go away, but to please come in. Then he says, "Yukach no matmai, and let a little bit of water be taken, varachatzu raglechem, and your feet will be washed. V'yishonat achas eitz, and you will recline under the tree." Why did he want there? It's a very interesting, it's a very fascinating lesson here. Why did he want their feet washed? So the Mefarshim tell us because they were Arvayim, normally translated as Arabs, not Arabs in the Islamic sense, but they were people of the land, right? And these are people who were engaged in pagan worship, and they were engaged in pagan worship, and they had a bizarre practice of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship. They would serve the dust of their feet, right? So the dust of their feet became an idol, became Avodah Zarah. Just take them on. Yeah. Now here we see Nefarim didn't want their feet washed before they come in, right? Okay. They served the dust of their feet, so therefore the dust of their feet had a halachic status almost as idols, which Avraham Avinu didn't want in his home, right? So he asks them to wash their feet before they come in. So here he is begging them. I mean, they were angels, but he didn't know that. No, but he didn't know that. Right? He thought. Sorry, I should have made that clear. He thought they were Arvayim, right? Sorry, not that they were Arvayim. They looked like Arvayim, right? Now, obviously, he didn't know that Hashem had hidden the fact that they angels from him because Allah was to defeat the whole purpose, right? He had to perceive that he was doing kindness, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But see, we have a fascinating thing. These are people who are idol worshippers, as most people were in the time of Avraham Avinu. Yet he's very tolerant. He's very kind. He's prepared to do kindness. He wants to do hachnasas arachim. He wants to bring them into his home, right? He's not discriminatory. He wants to bring them in. He wants to invite them in and serve them, and he runs for them, and he shechts calves, and he brings food and bread and all business, right? Yet, and why? Because Avraham Avinu is a man of chesed. He's a man of complete kindness, right? Yet, it's kindness with a strength. It's a very fascinating idea. It's kindness with principles, right? Tolerance and kindness doesn't mean that a person doesn't have principles. Avraham Avinu is prepared to do everything. He's sick. His third day after surgery. He's 99 years old. He sees these three people. They idol worshippers, and he's Avraham Avinu the tzaddik, right? Yet his kindness drives him to want to do kindness to them at the highest level. He'll run, he'll do everything for them, but he won't let them come into the house with dust, because the dust is idols, right? And the Farshim explained that's true chesed. You see, it all depends. We're going to talk about this a bit later again, from another point of view. But there's two types of kindness. When a person is kind, it doesn't always mean, we've discussed this once on a Thursday morning, but it doesn't always mean that the kindness is coming from a good place. There's kindness from a weakness, and there's kindness from a strength, right? Some people are kind because they feel guilty. It's a natural state of being. They have a very soft nature, coupled with a very strong level of insecurity, and therefore they're very scared to say no, they're very scared to not do kindness, their conscience won't let them, they'll be ridden with guilt, and therefore they'll always do kindness. That's not a good kindness. In fact, that's not a good emotion altogether. People, healthy emotions should never come from a place of weakness. It should come from a place of strength. In other words, that I'm quite comfortable with myself, I'm not insecure, I haven't got a soft nature or flexible, soft, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Fragile nature. But it's kindness because it's the right thing to do, because it's a mitzvah, because it's a good thing, right? Once kindness comes from a place of strength, then it's got strength to it. Then there are certain parts of kindness that are not considered kindness. Right? Sometimes if we're too kind, it's not good. So Avraham Avinu is absolutely kind to the nth degree, so much so that it says in the Zohar that the middah of chesed, we have Hashem's middahs, right? The middah, there's like a sort of an imagery of the Zohar. The Zohar says that the imagery of chesed, the middah of chesed came before Hashem and said that as long as Avraham Avinu is alive, I'm out of work. In other words, I don't need to operate. Avraham Avinu is the personification of chesed, right? The attribute of chesed doesn't have to do anything. It's redundant as long as Avraham Avinu is alive. Avraham Avinu epitomized the whole concept of chesed. He personified the middah. He wasn't just a kind man. He was kind. He was kindness. He was chesed, right? But it was true chesed. And chesed comes with a strength. Therefore, Avraham Avinu had no problem exhibiting the most incredible degree of chesed, but at the same time, together with the principles. I'll do everything for you, but in my house, you don't come with pagan worship because I protect the sanctity of my home. That's not cruel. It's principles. It's values. And therefore, he says, take a bit of water and wash your feet first before you come in. I mean, he said it nicely, obviously, but he still said it. He still insisted on it. Yeah. Then he says, the next pasuk, hey, I'll take a piece of bread, you will satisfy your heart, and then you will go. Because that's why you've come here. I mean, there's a purpose. They said, so yes, we will do as you will do as you said, and we'll oblige. Notice that when he first offers them the menu, it's a very simple menu. It's bread and water. It's all. Later, it's not bread and water. There's butter. There's a mulchi course. Then comes a fleishi course, which is itself a question, right? He runs. He's going to give them the most greatest delicacy, which is tongues in mustard. Do you know what the menu was? Yeah, did you know that? Did you know that he served them tongues and mustard?
I don't know that.
Rashi says, that's why he went and he shefted three calves. Tell me, the calves with the biggest appetite, what does he need three calves for? There's three people, you don't need three calves. So he wanted to give each one a tongue. Tongue with mustard is considered a very, very good food. Right? Today no one needs tongue anymore, but... okay, well there you are. Yeah. If you want to know where tongue comes from, it's all the way from Avraham Avinu, right?
The brisada,
because of Avraham Avinu. Yeah, that's right. Okay, So tongue and mustard. Why? But he doesn't tell him he's going to give him that. So that's where it works. Avraham Avinu. That's part of kindness. He promises a little, but does a lot. Some people promise a lot, and do a little. Right? Avraham Avinu starts off. He says, "No, come in. You won't go away hungry. Bread and water you have." And then he says that he come. They come in. There's a full menu. Yeah, interesting. By Ma'ar Avraham Elo Asara, and Avraham Avinu rushes to the tent to Sarah where his wife was. The Yerman, he says, Mahari, quick, Sholish Sim Kemachseles, three measures of fine flour, Lushi Basi, you guys knead them and make cakes. As we know, this cakes actually was a reference to matzah, because it was Pesach, we are told, and therefore he made matzahs, right? The La Bokarats Avraham, and Avraham Avinu runs to the cattle. Vayikach ben Bokar Rach V'toiv, and he takes a soft cattle. I'm just trying to remember where it says there were three, but there were three. Yeah, Rashi says, Gimel Paran, there were three. Yeah, it's Rashi. Right? But Yitan al-Nar, he gave it to the boy. Who was the boy? The boy was Yishmael. It says he gave it to Yishmael, the Kasha. He wanted to educate him with mitzvahs. So, getting the whole family involved. Educating him in kindness, educating him in mitzvahs. By Amar, last is Oisai, and he was very quick to do it, and he was all in a big rush, and he wanted to make sure it gets done. Then he took butter and milk, and the cattle that he took, he put in front of them. He didn't even eat. He stood over them like a waiter, tachas ha'eitz under the tree, and they ate. Okay, so that's the end of this first part. Now, there's an interesting concept here. We know that the famous idea, which you mentioned before a few times, but I want to just tackle it from a bit of a different angle. We know that Avraham Avinu left, he was in the middle of talking to Hashem when these guys came, right? So he left Hashem, so to speak, he left his audience with Hashem, and he went to attend to his visitors. Okay. In fact, according to one way of reading the Pasuk, as we just did before, he actually said to Hashem, please my master, don't go away, I'll be back. Right? So a famous Gemara, the Gemara learns from here that G'doyle hachnosas archem, that the mitzvah of hospitality, the mitzvah of receiving guests, right? The word hachnasas, you know what? The word for hospitality in Hebrew is hachnasas archem. The reason is because lahachnis means to bring in, right? So the mitzvah of bringing in guests is so great that it's greater than receiving the divine presence, greater than Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina. Right? How do we know this? Because Avraham Avinu was engaged in the experience of Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina. He was receiving the countenance of Hashem. He was talking to God. He left that in order to welcome guests. So we learn from there, Gedoyla Hachnasas Archim, great is the mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim, even greater than Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina, than talking to the Shchina, than receiving the divine presence.
So how would you reconcile that with interrupting davening if someone rings on the door? Well, you don't know, it's a guest, but not really.
No, I mean, it's a good question. Halachically, one wouldn't be permitted to interrupt, right? But I think what we're learning from there is the greatness of Hachnasas Archim. We're not trying to undermine the dinim of David Davni. In other words, what we're being taught here is the tremendous value of Hachnasas Archim, right? I mean, obviously, you have to go around, you have to finish one, and then open the door and hope they're still there, etc.
So, what does one do in a situation like that? In the middle of davening, does it depend what you.
If you're in the middle of Amidah, you can't interrupt. So one of two things: if it's important, the person will work. Sorry, even what?
Even for Hashem.
No, you're talking to Hashem, right?
Yeah,
that's right. Even no. So one of two things: if it's important, if a guy's taka standing there and he's taka hungry, he needs a meal. Believe me, he'll hang on 5 minutes before you, right? If it's someone who wants to nudge and it's not important, he'll probably go away. He'll come back another time. Right, so it's not a problem. I mean, by the way, it's very interesting. The mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim also needs to be defined. What we call today Hachnasas Archim is not necessarily Hachnasas Archim. Meaning, social visits are not. I mean, it's a big mitzvah and it's good to socialize and it's nice to be kind to each other. That's not necessarily Hachnasas Archim. Hachnasas Archim halachically actually means when someone has come and needs a place, like he needs a meal. Right, that's real Hachnasas Archim. I mean, in a Torah sense, in the halachic sense. Right. Anyway, so we learn from the Hachnasas Archim. Now, we know that Avraham Avinu went to be Mekayim, went to fulfill the mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim. So what did he do? He brings them in and he feeds them a meal. Now the question is, do they eat the meal? So we have one version of the Gemara that says they didn't really eat the meal, they looked as if they were eating the meal. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara is a Gemara where the Gemara talks about a concept called Azla Lerakarta Obit Kanamusa. Paraphrased and loosely translated is, when in Rome you do as the Romans. It doesn't quite say that, but when you come to a city, you adhere to its culture, right? How do we know that? So we know that, says the Gemara, from two things. Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Gemara, when he went up to the mountain for 40 days, three times. So it says in the Pasuk, Lechem Le'ochal Amayim Le'shasa. He never ate bread, he didn't drink wine, he didn't eat the whole time he was there. Why didn't he eat? Because the minag in Shemayim is, you don't eat. Malachim, don't eat. Right? So he didn't eat because he kept the custom of the place. As opposed to the Malachim, on the reverse side of that is the Malachim, this angel, when they came down here, they did eat because the minhag here is you eat, so therefore, over here you eat, so they all say. Says the Gemara, what do you mean they ate? They're the angels, they don't eat. Says the Gemara, nirin ka'echlin, they looked like they were eating. Right? So they weren't really eating. If they weren't really eating, we have the following problem. If they weren't really eating, Avraham Avinu didn't really fulfill the mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim. It wasn't really Hachnasas Archim. Hachnasas Archim means to satisfy someone's need. They didn't have a need. The whole thing was a perceived need. So therefore, sorry?
They were there for his need.
Correct.
To have
his. Yeah, but it's not really it's a different thing, but it's not mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim, right? Or is it? We have to decide. We have to see. On a simple level, one would imagine it's not the mitzvah of Hachnasas Archim, right? Chnasarach means someone needs a meal, you give it to them. So therefore, maybe it was a nice thing, but in truth, Avraham Avinu didn't really fulfill the mitzvah of Chnasarach, or did he? But if he didn't, we have a huge question, because if he didn't, then how, in hindsight, could Itaka interrupt his conversation with Hashem to go and receive the malachim? It might be true that G'doylah Chnasarach Megabalas Fina Shchina, that Chnasarach is greater than receiving the Shchina, provided that it's Hachnasas Archim. So he didn't know.
But he didn't know.
Okay, but how? So why would Hashem do that? Why would Hashem facilitate something wrong? Mm-hmm. Right? We learn a whole halacha out of this. We learn a whole halacha that Hachnasas Archim is so great. And it's greater than Kabbalas Pnei Hashchina. It's greater than talking to Hashem, right? So what are we learning? We're learning a whole halacha out of something that really didn't happen? Right. So one simple approach would be, there's another opinion. Tosfos says, he brings from Medrash, that in fact they did eat. It wasn't just an act, they taka ate. They had some sort of physical form, which they were given, and they taka ate. But it doesn't really answer the question. Because even if we were to assume they did eat, they only ate because Avraham Avinu wanted them to eat. In other words, they ate because they wanted to keep the minag. They didn't eat because they have a need. Right? Achnas Archa means fulfilling a need. Because he thought there was a need. Right, but was he really doing the mitzvah Achnas Archa? In other words, how about if a person puts up a mezuzah and he wants to fulfill the obligation of putting up a mezuzah, but the mezuzah is really possible, he just didn't know? Okay, so the answer there is, he doesn't get into trouble because he did his best, but he didn't do the mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't say you do a mitzvah. If you put up a mezuzah that's not kosher, it's not a mitzvah. You might not be your fault, you might not get into trouble, you might not be punished, you might not, I don't know what, but you can't say it's a mitzvah. Because it's not. So he didn't do the mitzvah, so the whole thing is very strange. The answer to this is hinted in a very interesting one sentence in the Rambam. That when the Rambam, when he talks about Achnas Asarchim, he says the following. The Rambam says that there's many, many mitzvahs which are sort of offshoots of the mitzvah of Avas Yisrael, of loving other people, right? Which are not detailed in the Torah specifically, but the Chachamim, the Rabbis, sort of specified what they are. Says the Rambam, what is it? It's mitzvah saseh shel Ibrahim, it's mitzvah saseh given to us by the Rabbis, levakir chaylim, to visit the sick, Nachem Avelim, to comfort the mourners, etc., etc., to bury the dead and all that. And then it says, Ula lavois esa orchim, to accompany the visitors. Mm-hmm. What does he mean by accompany the visitors? Because we know that Bachnas Orchim, there's three mitzvahs. One is to feed them, to give them a place to sleep, and then to accompany them. So it's interesting, when the Rambam talks about the mitzvah of Achnas Archim, he highlights the seemingly secondary detail of accompanying them out. He doesn't talk about the primary need of feeding the people, right? But he says the mitzvah is mainly reflected in accompanying them, in walking them out, or accompanying them on their way. Why is that? So it appears in the Rambam a very interesting chiddush. We have a discussion with mitzvahs. The mitzvahs that were between man and man, the mitzvahs that involve a giver and a receiver, in other words, the mitzvahs that are part of social conduct. What is the emphasis of the mitzvah, the giver or the receiver? So let's take the mitzvah of tzedakah, for example, right? All mitzvahs are good for the person, right? We do mitzvahs good for us. And if we do them with kavana, we do them in a better way, it's good for us. But what's the main emphasis of the mitzvah? So the main emphasis of the mitzvah by tzedakah is clearly the recipient. The recipient needs the money. Very simple. Right? So much so that the Gemara tells us that if someone loses money, you lose a $100 note. Now, one of many things can happen to the $100 note. It can get thrown in the garbage. A millionaire could find it. But there also exists a chance that a poor man can find it. Right? Says the Gemara, if a person loses $100 and someone who's really needy and hungry comes along and finds $100 and able to give himself a meal for that money, the person who lost the money did a mitzvah. You get a mitzvah. Add it to your mitzvah chart. Right? An amazing thing. In other words, that's a schus. If you lose money, you have to daven at least. If I'm not going to get it back, at least the poor man can find it. At least I got the mitzvah tzedakah, right? It's a mitzvah, it's not even my control. You understand what's going on here? It's not even my control. I might do the mitzvah, I might not. I don't know. It's out of my control now. I've davened to Hashem, I should do the mitzvah. But how come if it's out of my control, how come it's a mitzvah altogether? Because the mitzvah of tzedakah, the emphasis is on the receiver. Therefore, if it happens to be that I am lucky and I have a schus that a poor person finds it and therefore is able to fill their hunger or fill their need, whatever the case is, I fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah because the mitzvah of tzedakah was done with my money. And so too with many mitzvahs, right? Bikur Cholim is the same thing. Bikur Cholim is not visiting the sick is not for us to feel good because we visit the person in hospital. It's to attend to the needs of the person. That's what the Gemara says. It's to help the person out. Right. Comes along the Rambam with an unbelievable chiddush. And the Rambam says the exception to that is achnasas archim. The Torah gave people the mitzvah of achnasas archim. Obviously it's for the needs of the receiver as well. But the purpose of the mitzvah of achnasas archim is for the giver. It's for the person to become hospitable. That's the mitzvah. It's to refine the human being. So the human being should know that you go out of your way for other people's needs. Now obviously that can happen through tzedakah also, but in tzedakah that's not the emphasis. That's the emphasis with achnasas archim. How is that reflected in the Rambam with one word? When the Rambam wants to say it's a mitzvah for achnasas archim, what's the, out of the three things he's supposed to do for guests, what's the one that the Rambam chooses? To accompany him. Out of all three things, the one that is more relevant to the giver than the receiver is the accompanying. In other words, the guest came to my house, he's no longer hungry, he's fine, he'll be okay. If he walks out himself, he'll also be okay. Right? But when I walk him out, I'm showing my concern. That's the thing. It's showing care. It's not just filling a need, it's showing that I really care. That's why the mitzvah of levia, the mitzvah of accompanying is so great. Because I'm showing the extra dimension of care. I'm not going to just let you go out yourself. I'm caring. I have a certain level of nurturing that I'm going to walk you out. That's why the Rambam chooses that one out of the three, because he wants to tell us that when it comes to the mitzvah of achnasas archim, that's the emphasis. The emphasis is not so much the receiver, the emphasis is the giver. Therefore, now we understand the whole story. When Avraham Avinu is faced with a situation that in his mind there's a need, in his mind there are real people there who need a meal, and that's what he goes and does, and he fulfills the mitzvah, that is the mitzvah of achnasas archim. Avraham Avinu did fulfill the mitzvah of achnasas archim. Because he thought there was a need, and if he responded to a need that he thought existed, that's achnasas archim. Understand? Obviously, there needs to be at least a perceived need, right? In other words, you know, if a guest comes and you just make him eat, you know, he's full and he doesn't have a need, and you know he doesn't have a need, but you still want him to, you know, that's not achnasas archim. But the achnasas archim means I have a perceived need. I think there's a need, and I respond to that need. If I do that, at the end of the day, it makes a difference if the need is real or not. Because that's achnasas archim. It's about me learning to be hospitable. And that's why it all fits in now, that Avraham Avinu was able to run away from Hashem, and he was able, and we learn from that the gedolah, that achnasas archim is so great, because at least in his mind there was a need, because with achnasas archim it's different to every other mitzvah, the emphasis is the giver. Okay. Look, then the Sedra continues. We know that they tell him he's going to have a son. Sarah laughs, she didn't laugh. I mean, she denies laughing, etc. And then, Malachim leave. Where do they leave to? They leave to Sdoim. Because we know that one of the reasons there were three Malachim is because the three Malachim had three missions. One of them was to give the news to Avraham that he would have a child. The second was to destroy the city of Sdoim. Right. So the number of different little aspects that I want to focus on in the story of Sodom, I don't think we've had a chance to do that in the past because we're normally other things. So what happens is as follows. When they leave, they're on the way to Sodom to destroy the city of Sodom and the four neighboring cities. And Hashem says he does not want to conceal from Avraham Avinu the information that he's going to destroy Sodom, so he tells him. But when he tells him, Avraham Avinu flies into a debate with Hashem. Right, takes the case of Sodom, becomes Sodom's advocate, and tries to save it. So let's have a look on page 82, Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Right, Chaf Gimel 23. Vayigash Avram, vayomer Avram goes poster. He approaches Hashem and he says, "Waf tispe tzadikim rasha? Are you going to kill a tzadik with a rasha? I mean, he's going to kill everyone indiscriminately, you know, good people, bad people." Ulayesh Chamishim Tzadikim Mesoyechim. Maybe there's 50 Tzadikim. Haf Tispeh L'Sisa L'Mokir. You're not going to save the place. L'Manat Chamishim Tzadikim for the 50 righteous people. Hashem Bekirba. Chalilo L'Cha Ma'asoyis Kadavar Azeh. It doesn't befit you, he says to Hashem, to do such a thing. L'Hom Es Tzadikim Rosha, to kill a Tzadik together with a Rosha. L'Hoyach HaTzadik HaRosha, the Tzadik and the Rosha should all be equal. Chalilo L'Cha Shoyfet Kol Oretz, in Achas L'Chas V'Sholem, so to speak. The judge of all earth, Yasi Mishpat. So Vayoymer Hashem, and Hashem says, "Im emtzov bizdoim chamishim tzadikim." Believe me, if I find 50 tzadikim in Sodom, I will indeed save the entire place for them. Okay, so Avraham Avinu starts the conversation this way. Now he sees, at least he's got an audience, so he's going to keep going. Bayan Avraham Ayom, and Avraham answers and he says, Hinei no ha'alti ledaber el Hashem. I have begun to speak to Hashem. V'anoichi ofar v'efer, and I acknowledge that I am dust and ashes. Like I'm nothing. I'm totally humble, but yet I've begun, so if you don't mind, I'm going to continue. Then he says, La yachsrun chamishim atzadikim chamisha. Maybe there'll be minus five. Sashkis b'chamishas kol ir. So just because there's five less tzadikim than 50, so what? Now you're going to destroy the whole thing. Ayur min Hashem, no, le'ashkis. Hashem said, I will not destroy. Im emtza Hashem avoyim chamisha, if I find the 45 tzadikim. Okay, he goes on and on and on. And Hashem says, I can't find any tzadikim. And Avraham Avinu, unfortunately, is forced to concede defeat. And he goes back home. Interesting, by the way, that I saw a word once. Just look at the end of this whole thing. Have a look on page 84, Pasuk Lamed Gimel. All right. At the end of the conversation, so Hashem says, "That's it. I'm not gonna. Even if I find 10, I won't destroy the city. But obviously, it's not even 10. Avraham Avinu sees the last case. Right." So Pasuk Lamed Gimel says, "Vayelech Hashem kasher kila." Hashem went as he had finished. Lamed Avram, he's finished talking to Avram. VeAvram shov limekoymai, and Avram Avinu returned to his place. A very superfluous phrase. Where else did Avram Avinu go? Of course, he returned to his place. He went home. I mean, he lost the case. He went home. Hashem had gone. I mean, there's no point in standing there. So what does it mean Avram Avinu returned to his place? I saw once a word. I don't remember who says it. That it's come to teach us something. Avram Avinu saw he lost the case. Hashem left. So that's it. He moved on. He went back. Like I say in Yiddish, weiter geforen. Like, okay, next mission. In other words, we succeed at some things, we fail at some things. Sometimes Hashem does it, sometimes doesn't. Sometimes he says yes, sometimes says no. But the koyach of the Yid is that he, maybe even if he gets knocked back, okay, I didn't succeed. I had a mission. Avraham Avinu was very, very persistent. He was very determined to save Zdoim. He didn't succeed. But Avraham, he didn't sit there and mope, exactly. Right? Avraham shoved him a coin, went back to his place. What other mitzvah can I do now? What's the next good thing that I could do? Right? Just a little bit. But going back to the passage we said before, in the previous page, on the end of 82, Avraham Avinu said, "Vanoichi ofar v'efer, I am dust and ash." Right? So there's interesting Gemara, and the Gemara says, it's a Gemara in Gemara, so the Gemara says like this, "Bishar sha'omar Avraham Avinu vanoichi ofar v'efer," to reward Avraham Avinu for saying these two words, "I am like dust and ashes." Zochu bonav lishtei mitzvahs. His children merited two mitzvahs. Efer parah, the ashes of the parah aduma, and v'afar soita, and the dust of the soita. What's the dust of the soita? You know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah later on called the soita, the suspected woman who's been suspected of violating her husband, committing adultery, etc. She doesn't want to admit to it. She didn't heed the warnings of her husband, she's secluded with a man, etc. So her husband takes it to the Beis HaMikdash, she doesn't own up, she doesn't say anything wrong, so she has to drink a solution of water, right? That's the famous thing. And if she's guilty, she dies, and if she's innocent, she gets rewarded, that the water has a positive effect, and she has children in an easy way, and peace is restored between her and her husband. So when that happens, that water she has to drink in the water of the Seita is water that, the way it works, and all the Hashem said, the way it works is, that you have to take that water from the sink of the Beis HaMikdash, you've got to add a little bit of dust to it from the dust of the Beis HaMikdash, which obviously has a certain holiness to it. You've got to take Hashem's name written on the Megillah and rub Hashem's name into the water, and then she drinks that water, and it has one of the two effects, either negative or positive. So why did we get these two mitzvahs? The mitzvah of Efer Parah, the dust of Parah Duma, and Ofra Saita. So we got it because Avraham Avinu said, "I am Ofer v'Efer. I am nothing." Right? On the surface, it seems a little bit light. In other words, what's this, a play on words? Because he said, "I'm humble, dust and thing." So we've got two mitzvahs to do with dust and right? There must be something deeper that connects his mitzvahs. So I showed you an explanation that goes like this. And in fact, it's not just the fact that Avraham Avinu described himself as dust. That's why we got mitzvahs that involve ashes and dust. But actually, there's a very intrinsic connection between these two mitzvahs and the fact that Avraham Avinu was debating with Hashem to save Zidon. What is that? So it goes back to the concept that I said before about chesed, about kindness. Right? There's two types of kindness, as we said before. There's kindness that comes out of subservience to Hashem, out of strength, out of doing a mitzvah, out of a determination to do the right thing, right? And then there's kindness that comes out of a weakness, and that weakness can sometimes be egocentric. It can be because a person needs to soothe their own conscience. A person wants to. Sometimes the kindness comes where a person wants to display, wants to appear to be a very kind person, wants to build up a reputation, etc., etc. Right? And those two levels of kindness are very different, and they have very, very different consequences. So I said before, one of the consequences, for example, is that with kindness that comes from a weakness, there are no principles. With kindness that comes from a strength, there are values, and that's why Avraham didn't want the dust being brought into his home. But another difference is that when a person displays egocentric kindness, in other words, kindness that comes from a need to satisfy one's own needs and to appear to be a very kind person, normally it's a type of kindness that doesn't involve a person going out of their way. It doesn't involve sacrifice. Right? Sometimes you find this without trying to minimize anyone's kindness, but you find this with big celebrities who live disgusting, immoral lives, and all of a sudden will go to Africa one day to, you know, treat the kids with, I'll give them, I mean, it's a very nice thing, and it's good that it happens. But very often you wonder, like, how does it fit into the rest of the thing? And it's so, like, transparent that it's just to, you know, to portray them as good people, right? I mean, I'm sure some of it is good, but, you know, it's often, it's after they're very, very comfortable and made lots and lots of money, etc., etc. So you spend a little bit, and the whole world has to know about it, of course, you know, and then it's got to be all over the press. And, you know, what's it for? It's a PR stunt, right? That's one type of kindness. Then there's kindness that comes, true kindness. And true kindness, Chazal tell us, true kindness involves sacrifice. Involves the readiness to give up something to give someone else something. Well, that's a different type of kindness. That's kindness coming from a need to do a mitzvah, to do something good. Avraham Avinu, of course, when we talk about him being Midas HaChesed, Avraham Avinu's Chesed had no ulterior motives. And we see this all along. We see this theme going through Avraham Avinu's Chesed. He had no ulterior motives because when there was no guest to do and there was no one even to know about whether he's doing it or not, it was bothering him. He needed to do chesed. He was out there in the tent, right? Avraham Avinu's chesed involves sacrifice. He ran to shecht calves, to bring water, to bring bread, even when it was extremely dangerous for him and extremely difficult for him. But the extreme display of Avraham Avinu's ready for sacrifice is this debate that he has with Hashem. The Mefarshim say that when Avraham Avinu argued with Hashem, he put himself in danger. What he did was a chutzpah, actually. Right? Now, it's different when us, you know, when we daven and we mouth the words, and we daven and we ask and we beg. That's one thing. When we talk about Avraham Avinu is communicating properly with Hashem, he's not just saying words, he's communicating. He's really talking to Hashem, right? He's talking to Hashem and he's conscious of the conversation, he's conscious of the dialogue. And he speaks harshly with Hashem. It uses the word vayigash. Vayigash is normally a term of war. Right? He gets mixed into an issue that's not even his. Like, what's he mixing in? It's none of his business. It's not his business, not his family's business, right? But he's aware that there's a city that might be destroyed. He goes to back to them. And he goes back to the way where he puts himself in danger. And he says, I am nothing. I am Ofer of Ephraim. So Hashem says, such a display of chesed deserves two mitzvahs. Which mitzvahs? The mitzvahs where you see the same concept. It's not just a matter that there's dust here and dust there. These two mitzvahs, you see the same idea. One is the ashes of the Paraduma. What is the ashes of the Paraduma? The ashes of the Paraduma was a very interesting thing. The Paraduma, the halacha was, that if someone became impure from a dead body, right, so it would be the Paraduma. So what would happen? The Kohen had to take the cow to prepare the solution of ashes and water, etc., etc., and then sprinkle the solution on the person who had become very severely impure so that would purify the person. The halacha was a very fascinating halacha, which makes the mitzvah of paraduma so mysterious, and that's why it's called one of the chukim, is that the Kohen who sprinkles the water on the person who was impure becomes impure himself and has to go to mikveh. And that's why Chazal tell us that the paradum is such a mystery, such a paradox, that it's matayr es hatmeim, it purifies those that are impure, umatame es hatohirim, and it impurifies those who are pure. Right? In other words, the symbolism is a kohen who's ready to compromise himself to purify someone else. Same type of chesed, same type of idea. Not that I'm ready to purify someone else as long as it doesn't compromise me in any ways. No, I'm ready to do chesed after I've taken care of my needs and I've ensured and guaranteed that nothing will be compromised on my end. Now I'm ready to do chesed to someone else. No, it's a chesed I'm ready to do somewhere else that involves sacrifice. The kohen is ready to give up something. He's ready to purify himself to help another person. The koyach that we have to do that comes from Avraham Avinu. That's the schar. The reward that we have to engage in such a mitzvah, we inherit from Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu was prepared to do that. He gave it to us. And Hashem does that too. Now, Hashem says the reward is that I will show that example as well. And that when it comes to the soita. The soita, the Gemara says that what happens with the soita, this mitzvah that involves the dust of the Beis HaMikdash, that you have to rub out the Megillah, you have to rub out the paragraph of the Torah that talks about the soita into the water, and then she drinks that solution. And the Gemara talks about it, it's an amazing thing. We have an Isser. There's a prohibition to erase Hashem's name.
Do we know how many times that actually happened? We know that there's
what, the soita?
Yeah.
Don't know. It did happen, but it did, right? Because it stopped after a while. It says there was a time in that didn't have an effect anymore, and therefore they abolished it. Right? So the Gemara says, what's this business of erasing Hashem's name? We know there's such a holy thing, such a terrible thing to do. So the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yimoche Shmi, let my name be erased, as long as we can try and restore peace between husband and wife. In other words, the purpose of the mitzvah soita, the whole idea of the mitzvah soita is that Hashem was prepared to have his name erased in the water because there's a chance that would be able to then restore shalom bayis. Right? In other words, in the mitzvah soita, Hashem is doing, he's displaying the same type of chesed. Chesed with a compromise. Chesed with a sacrifice. And that's the deep shot of that the schus and the schus of Avraham Avinu going to bat for Zdoim and having to come to Hashem and begging and then saying that he's offer of the Eifer, that he's dust and thee. We got these two mitzvahs which symbolize the same sort of chesed, the same sort of idea, chesed with a sacrifice, chesed even if it's going to compromise yourself. And that's the connection between the story of Avraham Avinu and these two mitzvahs. Okay, let's have a look at another aspect of what happened with Zdoim. We know what happened was, you know what happened was that Lot was the judge of Zdoim the day they got there, right? The famous story. Lot wasn't a very good fellow, but one thing he did, he inherited a little bit of chesed from Avraham Avinu's house, and therefore he actually put himself in a bit of danger, and he welcomed the malachim into them. Right? Then what happened was I'm not going to go through all the psukim inside, but what happened was the Sodomites actually heard about that Lot is harboring guests, and that was a terrible transgression, a terrible offense. So they surrounded the house. If you look in the psukim, it says they surrounded the house, and they said to Lot, "Give us the men who have come to you. We will know them, meaning we will have a relationship with them. We will have." They wanted to act immorally with them, right? One of the averis, one of the transgressions of Zdoim, of course, was sexual depravity. But they were a terrible, terrible people, right? Which is where the English term sodomy comes from Zdoim. Yeah. Then what happens is, what does Hashem do? He performs a miracle and Hashem smites all the people that are surrounded the house of Zdoim with blindness. They all become blind, they're not able to find the door, they're going to bash down the door, they can't find the door, and eventually they all go home and they abandon the idea. And these guests stay in Lot's tent or Lot's house the rest of the night. Incidentally, we see Lot, by the way, did not ask them to wash their feet. He didn't care less if they brought a Avodah Zarah into the house or not. Right? But they sleep overnight. The next morning, They say to Lot, "Look, we're going to destroy the city. You better run, and we save you and your family. In the schus of Avraham Avinu, you have the chance to escape. Get out of here." So we find a very interesting pasuk. The pasuk says, "Let me just find it." Pasuk is on page 86. Right, Pasuk Yudalad, verse 14. Right. So It says like this. Vayetze loit, right, the other pasuk? Vayetze loit, and loit went out. Vayedaber el chasonov, and he spoke to his sons-in-law. Sons-in-law weren't in the house, he went to find them. Loit chay v'noisav, those who took his daughters. Everybody says to them, listen, kumu, get up, tsumen amakum azeh, get out of here. Right, obviously he was given permission to save his sons-in-law as well. Ki mashchis Hashem esair. Hashem is destroying the city. You better move. Vayihi kemetzachek be'enei chasonov. And he seemed like a joke, like a jester in the eyes of his sons-in-law. His sons-in-law didn't take him seriously. And they perished. So the Kliyokar, that's an interesting question. It says, I don't understand. The sons-in-law didn't take Lloyd seriously. Didn't they remember what happened the night before? Right? Just the night before, there was this whole thing that they came and wanted to break down, that there was this miracle. Right? They were obviously godly people. The hand of God was obvious here. Hashem smote everyone with blindness. They shouldn't be able to find the door. They shouldn't be able to capture the angels, etc. Right? So it wasn't just like a new thing that Lloyd had made up. This was going on already for 24 hours. It was obvious that something miraculous was going on. It was obviously that the people who Lloyd was harboring his guests were not simple people and knew what they were talking about. And now it comes with a message from them that Hashem is about to destroy the city, and they take it as a joke. What's up, Shah? So Kliok says an interesting thing. If you have a look at the Pasuk, let's look at the Pasuk again. He says, Ki mashchis Hashem esfa'ir. Right? Hashem is going to destroy the city. Now we know that there's different names for Hashem, right? Primarily the names we use in the Torah, the two names are Hashem and Elohim. What's the difference between Yudke, Vavke and Elohim? Elohim is the name of judgment, of harshness, of concealment, of discipline. Yudke, Vavke is the name of Rachamim, name of mercy. Light is talking to them and he uses the name of mercy, his name of Rachamim. So his sons think it's a joke. You're talking about Hashem of mercy? He says, he's not going to destroy the city. If he's a God of mercy, he's a God of Rachamim. So where's the Rachamim? We destroy a whole city. Right? So what's Taka the Pshat? Why did Lord use that law? What use that name? Because we have a concept that Hashem sometimes uses Din and sometimes uses Rachamim. Right? And sometimes there are certain days of the year, there are certain times where there's more of it. For example, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's the Midas Adin. We know that Din is the name of Elohim. Hashem, the name of Hashem is a bit hidden. We are taught that when we take a shofar, we blow a shofar, we do tshuva, Hashem leaves the throne of Din and he sits on the throne of Rachamim. Right? So at the end of it all, even though we don't 100% deserve it, Hashem has Rachamim on us and he gives us a good year. Right? In other words, how does it work? Why do we need to do tshuva? Because Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are days of Din. It's days where Din is more apparent, right? Then there are certain times of the year or certain instances or certain experience where Hashem's Rachamim is more, like, you know, it says that Chayis at midnight. Why do some people, you know, Tikkun Chatzos? Why is there a special Indian to pray at midnight, daven at midnight? Because midnight is a time where Hashem's Rachamim is more apparent. If you take the night, it says the first half of the night, Hashem's Din is more emphasized. Second half of the night is more Rachamim, etc. There are times for this, time for that. But then there are times where something so negative can happen that there is no Rachamim altogether. That Hashem's Rachamim is transferred to Din. Transformed to Din. Lloyd comes to his sons-in-law, he says, Ki mashchis Hashem esair. Not a Elohim. So you need to understand, they took it the other way around. They misunderstood the whole thing. But he wants to warn them, he says, you have to understand what's going on here. This is not reversible. Why is it not reversible? Because there is no Rachamim to go to. Hashem's Rachamim in this case has been transformed to Din. And that's what he means, Ki mashchis Hashem, Yudke Vavke, that Hashem, the Rachamim, the name of Rachamim is going to destroy the city. Because there is no Rachamim. It's been transformed to Din. The question, of course, is, how can that be? How can that be that the Rachamim should be transformed to Din? Where is the Rachamim? By the way, the definition of Rachamim, the definition of mercy is that you give even when someone doesn't deserve. That's what Rachamim is, right? For Hashem to save someone or to reward someone when they absolutely deserve it, that's not Rachamim. That's just logical. Okay, so at the end we say it's always rachmim because we never fully deserve it. Okay, but the whole idea of rachmim, the whole concept of rachmim, is Hashem to give or to save even we don't deserve it. That's the idea of rachmim, right? So where is the middle of rachmim? We know that Hashem has the middle of rachmim. So where is the middle of rachmim? So the answer is very simple. You can always sort of quote, evoke. You can always bring out the middle of rachmim, but there's one exception where you block the middle of rachmim. You block the middle of rachmim if you undermine the very concept of rachmim. What does that mean? The people of Sodom were destroyed, they were punished. People of Sodom were guilty of hundreds of different transgressions. Right? They had a terrible sense of justice. They were immoral sexually. Very, very immoral, we see from the whole story. But that's not why Hashem destroyed them. Chazal tell us that the reason that Hashem destroyed Sodom was because of their injustice to other people, the way they treated other people. The contrast to Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu pursued Hachanasas Archim. They treated having a guest as an offense, as a severe offense. Right? They were the absolute opposite to the concept of Rachman. At the end of the day, why were they destroyed? Not because of all the other severe transgressions. They were destroyed because there was no room for Rachman anymore. That's why Avraham Avinu couldn't get anywhere with Hashem. Because they blocked the middle of Rachmim. Why did they block the middle of Rachmim? Because they undermined Rachmim themselves. Same thing with the Mabul, by the way. The Mabul, we know, the flood, we let in Noach. At the end of the day, why were they, Rashi says, the sealing of the judgment, the final verdict, the final conviction, came because of the transgression of theft. Theft? They were guilty much more than theft. But they blocked the Rachmim. When there's no mercy upon each other, you block the rachmim coming about. I'll give you an interesting halachic example for this idea, for this concept. There's a very interesting Gemara when it comes to Yom Kippur that discusses, we know there's an idea that the day of Yom Kippur atones, right? The very day, the day itself has a nature of atonement, cleanses and atones it. So there's a machlekes in Gemara, there's a dispute whether Yom Kippur will atone for someone if they do tshuva or they don't do tshuva, right? So the rabbis, who we actually follow, we passing like this, that no, it only atones if you do tshuva. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, we don't actually go this opinion, unfortunately, but Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that no, that Yom Kippur will atone, in other words, when a person comes out of Yom Kippur, they're atoned for, whether they did tshuva or they didn't do tshuva. Yeah, you're supposed to do tshuva, but if you didn't do tshuva, Yom Kippur atones to you anyway. Right? Good. So there was a great Torah scholar, his name was the Roger Tshuva. Very, very famous Torah scholar, right? Rabbi Tshuva guy. Lived in 100 years ago. Right? And he comes with an interesting chiddush. He says, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Yom Kippur can atone even if you don't do tshuva, that's provided one thing. The exception to that would be someone who broke Yom Kippur itself. Like he ate on Yom Kippur. If he ate on Yom Kippur, then Yom Kippur doesn't atone for that person. Why? Because Yom Kippur has an amazing power. And that power can override any other transgression that can atone for a person, even if they didn't do tshuva. But not if you undermine the Yom Kippur itself. If you undermine the Yom Kippur can't work for you. Right? Same thing when it comes to this. Sometimes we can bring out Hashem's rachamim to avoid the gezeira, to avoid din. Because Hashem has the middle of rachamim. When can we do that ever? If we don't undermine the middle of rachamim. When we undermine the very quality of rachamim, we block Hashem's rachamim. Which is why in the second story of Parshas Noach, the story of the Tower of Babel, where they rebelled against Hashem with absolute heresy, yet they weren't killed. They were punished, but they weren't killed. There was some level of rachamim. Why? Because they were together. So Hashem's rachamim still existed. When it came to the Mabul, Hashem's Rachmim was transformed. When it comes to Zdoim, Hashem's Rachmim was transformed. And that's what Lloyd is saying. He's coming to him and saying, Ki Mashchis Hashem, the Rachmim is going to destroy you. Because you block the Rachmim. And that's why we say that the Keli, the vessel of Bracha, is Rachmim to other people. Achtos, unity, being good with other people. Barcheinu Avinu, we say in the Enosh Manesha, Barcheinu Avinu Kolanu Ke'echad. Hashem should bless us all as one. That's the literal translation, but the deeper translation is Barcheinu Avinu, when does Hashem bless us? Kulanu ke'echad, we all like one. Right? So we know that idea, that harmony, peace is a keli, is a vessel for blessing. Why? Maybe the other things. It's true, other things also you need, but at least if there's rachamim between each other, we at least create a channel for Hashem's rachamim. And they didn't, so they undermined the rachamim, and therefore they were destroyed. Good? We'll stop there.